that's the very moment where my conviction of Bitcoin was ironclad. Like, holy shit, all the promises are true. We are actually in charge. It's not just another novelty. It's a discovery on par with the wheel or the internet or the ability to make fire.
Yeah.
Mistaken for a gimmick by the masses. So fuck your shitcoin. Some people are afraid if hyper-Bitcoinization happens too fast, then there's going to be chaos.
Yeah.
And there's going to be violence. And what they leave out is that there is violence now. The government is stealing from you every single day. That's what we're getting away from. You don't really own anything that can be confiscated. You possess it, but you don't really own it, because the guy who's making the rules has you by the balls. He owns your ass. This is true for so much in fiat land. Bitcoin is like the ultimate form of armor. From the simple fact that it makes the attack less profitable than just interacting with you in a friendly way.
Down a rabbit hole. Down. Cypherpunk.
Welcome back to another episode of Cypherpunked. This is episode 3 of our Infinity series. I'm here with Knut Svanholm, and today we're going to talk about ownership. Welcome back, bro.
Thank you. Good to be back.
What is ownership, if not the ability to resist confiscation? Every mansion, gold, bar, and painting can be stolen, but Bitcoin, when you memorize 12 or 24 words, you become your money.
Yeah. Oh, these ideas have evolved a lot since I wrote this book. But yeah, let's lay out the difference between ownership and possession. So if you own something, like your phone there, or we can use my phone as an example. Mm-hmm. So I own this phone, right? And I'm also in possession of the phone, meaning that I'm holding it in my hand right now. And I can give it to you. And then I can say, Maddie, can I have my phone back? Now you are in possession of the phone, but I still own it, right?
I thought possession is 9/10 of the law.
Yeah, exactly. And this is here depends on if you're thinking about legal law or natural law, which are two different things. So, and we'll get into that in another chapter of another book here, I think. But you then have two options. You can either give the phone back. And nice of you to do that, by the way.
I'm a nice guy. What can I say?
Because the other option you had was to say, fuck you, Knut. You're not getting the phone back.
Damn it. Give me another chance.
Which is what, you know, some African countries have experienced when trying to get their gold back from European banks and so on. Or you getting your gold back from, like, yeah. What happened to that Fort Knox thing that Trump was talking about, by the way?
I haven't heard much about it.
No, it's like, let's not talk about that anymore.
I heard, like, in a bank in Canada, they went in and, like, they cut open the first gold bar they saw, and they found that it was just wrapped in gold and it was all fake metal. And they locked up the safe and said, oops.
A gold.
We're never coming back in
Willy
here.
Willy Wonka's factory.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's the difference between ownership and possession. But... So when you own a Bitcoin, do you also possess it? And do you even own it? And the correct answer is no, you cannot own a Bitcoin and you cannot possess a Bitcoin. All you can do is know a secret that you think that no one else knows, and that is your private key. So regardless if you know the actual private key, or if you know the location of a hardware wallet and its PIN code, or if you know 12 magic words, or anything else that allows you to move your Bitcoins, then you effectively own them. But they're not really yours. And the only thing that makes them yours is that you find it very improbable that someone else has this information that you have. And also, you'll find it very improbable that the core rules of Bitcoin will change in the future, because you know about game theory and you know a thing or two about how the Bitcoin protocol works. So you know that you would need an overwhelming consensus to change the 21 million ever or something like that. So you believe in Bitcoin and you believe that no one else has the key. But it's not a 100% thing. It's just information. And no one on earth can own information. I mean, I think intellectual property laws are bullshit, because we all benefit from each human being having as much information about stuff as possible. Like if I have a recipe for a nice blueberry cake, I stand to gain and not lose from you also owning the recipe. And this is true for everything. The more that knows stuff, the better. So you can't really own your Bitcoin. So then what the hell is it? Like, what does that imply? Since it's all keeping a secret, it means that the Bitcoins are not actually on the internet or even on the blockchain. Because the Satoshis are the thing that makes them valuable to you is that you and you only can move them. So they're not really on Bitcoin or on the blockchain or even on the internet. They're in your head because it's all about keeping a secret. And you can say that about every aspect of the Bitcoin network. Like, what is a miner? Is it an ASIC? Is it a hangar full of ASICs? Is it the rack you have outside of the studio here with ASICs running? Or is it you, the guy who decided to buy the ASICs, plug them in, and run the software? And I say it's the person and not the machines. The machines are merely, like, they're a very fancy abacus that helps you do the calculation. Mm-hmm. But you're the one who decided to do the calculation and use this particular tool for helping you do calculus. And the same is true for the node. You are the node, not the Raspberry Pi or the Start 9 or the Umbral or whatever. It's you. You're the one who bought it. You're the one who plugged it in. And you're the one who chose what software to run on it. So everything in Bitcoin is predicated on human action and humans choosing to do stuff. And that's what secures the network, which means that the only attack vector is complacency. If we all...
Human action, that's a great name for a book.
It is. Somebody
should write a book called Human Action.
And somebody should probably try to compress that book into 200 pages to make it a little easier somewhere down the line. So that's the thing about ownership in Bitcoin. But in this book, I talk about how easily confiscated stuff is. So if you own a house and there's a real estate tax in your country, I don't think there's such a thing here in the US, but is there? Do you pay like house taxes?
There's property tax.
Property tax.
And depending on where you are in the US, there could be much. If you're in New York or California, you're essentially a slave. You don't own anything.
No.
It's like massive. But if you're here in Florida, our governor is talking about getting rid of that completely. Yeah. So that might be happening here. It's already so low that...
Yeah, but it's still, you're living in your own, your own property because you have a permission to do so from someone else.
Yeah.
Which is absurd.
It's absurd, yeah.
Absolutely absurd. It means you don't really own it. You possess it, but you don't really own it because the guy who's making the rules has your balls, like has you by the balls, you know, and he owns your ass and your ass. It's like, so that's the true owner. And this is true for so much in fiat land. You don't really own anything that can be confiscated. But your Bitcoins cannot be confiscated. And if I am an attacker, like a highway robber or a thief or a mafia boss, no, a mafia henchman or a mobster of some kind or a government or another criminal organization.
I thought that's what you're talking about the whole time.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you're just saying those same words.
Ways. In different ways, yes. And I point a gun to your head and I say, Maddie, give me all your Bitcoins. There is no way for me, the attacker, to know how many Bitcoins you actually own. So you can give me a fraction of your Bitcoins and I may think that I stole it all. But for instance, if you have, if you own a house and you own 99 Bitcoins, and someone puts a gun to your head and says, give me all your Bitcoins, you can give them one Bitcoin. Or you can give them your house, but they still can't get to the other 99 Bitcoin. If you're doing your security in a good way, so
I just give them what I have in my hot wallet.
Yeah, exactly. Here,
this is what I've got. Yeah, you can have it. But I don't even have access to
But I don't think what people understand what this implies. If you extrapolate that thought vector into the future as far as possible, mm-hmm. it means that it's very likely for every attacker that it's more profitable to interact with you with consent and voluntarily by trading with you than attacking you.
Governments aren't going to like this.
No, and attackers, attacking another person is costly. Regardless of who is doing it, there's a risk involved mm-hmm. and there's cost involved. Even if you're the government, there's a cost involved. Like yes, people can vote for the other party and whatnot if you live in a democracy. But Bitcoin is effectively turning this on its head and making the attack more possible. So if you see this from an evolution of weaponry perspective, you have fisticuffs. And then knife, and then mm-hmm. pointy sticks, and then spears, and then swords, and then someone invents the shield, and a shield is good for a while, and then someone invents armor, and a knight in armor can do the whole, you know, the mountain from Game of Thrones thing and rape and pillage as much as they want because no one can touch them. Until the gun is invented and gunpowder, and you can shoot the knight. But Bitcoin is like the ultimate form of armor, because it, from the simple fact that it makes the attack less profitable than just interacting with you in a friendly way instead of an unfriendly way. And I find that insanely fascinating. And also that's why I think that some people are afraid if hyper-Bitcoinization happens too fast, then there's going to be chaos and there's going to be violence. And what they leave out is that there is violence now. Mm. The government is stealing from you every single day. Yeah. And that's what we're getting away from. Bitcoin is just more and more of getting away from that. So I think that's always a good thing.
I've always been thinking about, I've been thinking about that a lot lately, right? To see, because I know there's still so few people who are not off zero, right? So it's like, if hyper Bitcoinization happens so fast, I feel sorry. I mean, it would just be so... Who knows what would happen, right? It would just be like what happened when Weimar Republic, like what happened with all that? It was just like, it was not good.
Right? But it's not Bitcoin's fault. It's fiat's fault.
Yeah.
Because the flip side of hyper Bitcoinization is hyperinflation. And that will happen in fiat, especially the faster hyper Bitcoinization happens. But that is a problem with fiat. It's not a problem with Bitcoin. And this is also like all the criticism Bitcoin gets from the on and off ramps are complicated. It's so hard to buy. They won't accept Bitcoin at my local supermarket or whatever. All of these are fiat problems, not Bitcoin problems. The on and off ramps are they are problematic because they because of the banking system, not because of Bitcoin.
Yeah.
So there's so many misconceptions there. And where was I here in the... Yeah. Next question, please.
You talked a little bit about open. You kind of said like information, intellectual property. Why don't we talk a little bit about the MP3 revolution and how that changed your understanding of intellectual property? I just as a little side note to go down. A little string to pull on.
Yeah. The internet made anything in the informational realm, since you can copy all data very easily on computers, it made the cost of production of digital things super cheap. And the MP3 took over after CDs, which took over after vinyls and stuff. So music became free, basically. And everything else too, like movies are so cheap to produce now, especially with the AI revolution, mm-hmm. that everything is going to be super cheap to produce, and it's getting increasingly cheaper. This is interesting because right now producing a new dollar, you do that by pressing enter or number of zeros and then enter on a keyboard, right?
That's insane. It's really, so you don't even actually have to, we say print the money, but like that would be costly in and of itself.
Yeah, it's printed digitally.
Like, and they have massive printers, but it would still require an effort and time to actually print trillions of dollars.
There was an actual cost until the internet.
Like, even though it's literally printed on random pieces of paper, there's still a cost to that.
Right now, typing the word dollar requires you to press 6 keys, while printing a new one only requires you to press 1. So it's 6 times more expensive to type the word dollar than to make an actual dollar if you have the power to do so.
Yeah, I read that. I don't know how accurate this stat is, but I'm sure it's close to it, that like 97 or 98% of all money is like not even physically real. It's simply digital.
Yeah.
Have you heard that before?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And one of the amazing little tidbits here that I love is that during 2021, peak COVID, 21 million dollars were printed per Bitcoin mined.
That's wild.
It's poetic.
It is poetic.
And it also means that 21 million dollars is a low price estimate for Bitcoin in the future.
Wow. Yeah, they printed around $20,000 to $21,000 per head of each individual in the United States. I know.
Yeah.
Men, women, and children. They gave everybody $1,200 check, and then what happened to the other $20,000 per head?
They stole it back through higher prices.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the
candle sugar and shop.
It was sugar on top,
literally and metaphorically.
Yeah,
because we're in America.
True. Oh my goodness!
Put sugar on top of everything here.
Yeah, we got a problem, man. I got to stop. It's everywhere you turn, man. Everywhere you turn. Would it be safe to say that Bitcoin is humanity's first truly non-confiscatable asset?
Yeah. And ironically enough, it's because you cannot own it. Because inside you.
Is this your is this how you've your thoughts on this have evolved since you wrote
this chapter? Yeah, it is. It is. Like it took me, and interestingly enough, this is what fascinated me about Bitcoin in the first place. Like, there was this claim that there was something on the internet that they couldn't copy. And I'm like,
yeah,
how can that be? Because I remember my first interaction with my Commodore 64 in the mid 80s when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And I could make a simple program with in the programming language BASIC, where I wrote 10 print hello and 20 go to 10. And then it would print the word hello over and over again on the screen. And I'm like, oh, this is fantastic. You copy everything in an infinite amount of times. So when someone claimed that there was this thing that couldn't be copied on the internet, that's what intrigued me. And that's why I never shitcoined, by the way, because like I saw that as the thing from the very beginning. And it took me...
You saw what is the thing?
Resistance to replicability, like this thing that could not be copied, because I instantly understood that any copy of that thing would that's what made it so sound made it sound so impossible to me. But how can you, well, you could just make a copy of that, the thing that cannot be copied. You just make a copy of the software.
Oh, yeah. But Bitcoin is so much more than just the software.
It's not the software. And you realize like that is the thing that makes it unique, because every other thing in Bitcoin can be copied. The code can be copied. The blockchain can be copied.
Mm-hmm.
Even the private keys can be copied. Everything in it can be copied, except the Satoshi itself. And the reason it can't is because they live in your head.
It's fascinating to think about.
But it's true. Like, try to argue against it.
Yeah, my mind is being blown.
I didn't come here for nothing.
Well, yeah. At the beginning of this episode, you talked about this idea of the secret that you know that nobody else knows. Can you, people are going to listen and they're going to think, oh, that's kind of confusing. Can you expound on that a little bit and maybe just explain how rare it is to, like, how actually cryptographically secure and rare that secret is that you know?
I don't know have the exact numbers on this, but I
give a good analogy.
It's like trying to find a pebble in the Milky Way. Like it's super hard to find a Bitcoin private key. So you can derive the public key from the private key, but not the other way around.
Yeah.
Because of elliptic curve cryptography.
Yeah.
So you can very easily create a private key. You can just take words from the word list for the 12 magic words, the seed phrase list, and make up a random sentence from those. And that's a private key that works with and from which you can derive a public key, and then you can send Bitcoin to that. You can throw a dice 99 times. That's a Bitcoin private key. That's a functioning wallet that you can send money to. And you can flip a coin 256 times. That's also an actual thing. So so whenever I see that meme, sometimes people post the entire word list of the, that's like 1,000 words or a bit more in that word list, right? For the 12 magic words, the seed phrase word book, or the seed phrase dictionary, whatever you call it. But whenever someone does that, I just reply 0, 1. Because that's also all the Bitcoins in the world. Mm. It's just with a 1 and a 0, you can derive all the Bitcoin addresses from those two numbers. It's just information. It's just information. I think the best way to differentiate between information and data is that data is just ones and zeros, and information is ones and zeros interpreted by a human being.
Interesting.
Yeah. So information is inherently valuable to someone. Whereas data doesn't have to be. Mm-hmm.
Final question for this chapter. When we talk about ownership and all different things like property and real estate and gold, if in a Bitcoin world, what happens to real estate, gold, and these other stores of values we've kind of built our economies on?
I think real estate is always going to be valuable. Mm-hmm. Because it's scarce. Also, you can use your Bitcoin to buy your dream house, and that mm-hmm. might be in a specific location.
Yeah.
So that will always be valuable to people. Gold, more questionable. It'll probably just go back to its use value, which is jewelry and some industrial use. Mm-hmm. And some may keep gold coins and gold bars and for as a collectible, I guess, but Bitcoin mm-hmm. will take over most of that market, I think, if Bitcoin just keeps working.
There's so many effects of the current fiat system, and one of them, especially with real estate, obviously real estate is scarce and valuable, but it's become this monetized asset.
Yeah, here's a thought about that. So I think the dichotomy between store of value and medium of exchange is false. I view it as a medium of exchange over time and space. That's what money is. And it's over space when you trade money with other people. Mm-hmm. And it's over time when you trade with your future self. So I think the whole dichotomy, the debates between should Bitcoin be a store of value or a medium of exchange primarily, are completely skewed, because you cannot have one without the other. If Bitcoin is not a store of value, it fails. If Bitcoin is not a medium of exchange, it fails. So in other words, if Bitcoin is not a 4D medium of exchange, meaning over space and time, it fails. And right now, real estate is being used as a medium of exchange over time, meaning a store of value. Mm-hmm. So what happens in fiat, since you can't save in fiat, like fiat is a very good medium of exchange over space, mm-hmm. but it's crap over time. Gold is very good over time, but it's crap over space because it's not portable nor divisible, nor easily verifiable. So what happens in the fiat world is that people start to use assets as a store of value instead of money. Money should have been the store of value. And when people do that with real estate becomes worse as housing for people. It's yeah. an original purpose.
We see that. I mean, yeah. That's like...
You look at Miami seaside property. almost all of them are empty because a billionaire owns all of them.
Yeah.
Right? So when assets get a monetary use case, they become worse at their original function. Mm-hmm. But the same is true for money. If money is anything else but a medium of exchange over time and space, it becomes a worse form of money. So the other use cases for gold actually distort the price of gold a tiny bit. So it's a monetary, it makes gold a slightly worse form of money.
Interesting.
And this is true for Bitcoin too. So if Bitcoin is crappy fucking JPEG storage, it makes it a worse medium of exchange over space. and over time, because over time, if the chain is the faster the chain grows, and the costlier it becomes to fire up a new node. In other words, the costlier it becomes to fire up a new node. So when you first sync the blockchain to your mm-hmm. node, or the time chain to your node, it takes a couple of days,
yeah.
and all the data from February 2023 and onward take more time than all the data before that. And that is because in February 2023, some genius got the idea that we could put monkey JPEGs on the blockchain and started spamming. And this is a problem because it makes Bitcoin a worse medium of exchange. And it also makes the barrier to entry to run your own node higher, meaning that your Umfufu in Kenya cannot fire up his own node anymore because he can't afford anything more than a Raspberry Pi. So right now, it's very hard to make Bitcoin a functional Bitcoin node from a Raspberry Pi. You need a proper computer, or you need a more powerful computer, or at least more disk space.
So I'm still using my Raspberry Pi from like...
Yeah, but you already synced the blockchain several years ago, right?
No, I just changed it. I had an Umbral.
Okay.
I changed it to a Start 9.
Yeah, so, yeah.
But great. I'm still using my original... what is it, like a 2 terabyte drive that I bought like 5-6 years
yeah,
ago.
Yeah, 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 great.
And it's still fine. Like, it's
yeah, that's good. But what I'm saying is that we know that this cost is going to go up over time because the Bitcoin can only get bigger and never smaller.
Yeah.
And the hope is that Moore's law will still be in play.
Oh, I think it's so far accelerated what's being stored on Bitcoin that's not even... So like my personal opinion is like, I don't even think this is an issue. I think it's so irrelevant that like Bitcoin grows as money, like people, if idiots want to put that stuff on Bitcoin's chain, like they're just, it's hard. It's just, it's non-sustainable. It's non-sustainable.
But it's going to be there forever.
Yeah.
So you can objectively say that it would be better for Bitcoin as a form of money if it wasn't there. Because of what I said about the store of value aspect of real estate, it's just a flip side of that. Mm. If it's being used for other quote unquote use cases, it's not. And you know, here's the thing about putting other stuff, other data on the Bitcoin blockchain. We can use a JPEG as an example, but it's true for all other types of data too. The thing that makes Bitcoin function that is internal to the system is the Satoshi. No other data is valuable to the protocol itself. That is what miners are paid in, and that is what we use as a medium of exchange over time and space between one another. So all the other data that is put on there is publicly visible. So even if it doesn't, if I put a JPEG there, I need a third-party website to interpret that as a JPEG, mm-hmm. because it's just ones and zeros, and I need some other software to view it as a JPEG. So, for instance, when Mara puts up a block where you on mempool.space, you can see it as a picture of a pizza or the face of Donald Trump or something. The picture is not actually there. It's just interpreted as a picture by some data, some other software, in this case, mempool.space, that has nothing to do with Bitcoin other than it's observing the chain. But it's not a picture that is on the chain. It's just ones and zeros. To internal to Bitcoin, the file isn't there. You always need a third-party website to unlock it or to interpret it as data.
What about what Satoshi put on the very first block ever when he put that in financial data?
This might be an unpopular opinion, but I think he shouldn't have.
Oh, you think he shouldn't have? Okay.
No, I think there shouldn't have been like...
You're entitled to your opinion.
Yeah, I think it would be better if Bitcoin was only money and nothing else from the very get-go.
I agree with you. I just think that over time, economically, that argument will play out.
Yeah. I agree to that too. Yeah. But it doesn't take away from the fact that all spam on Bitcoin is making it more costly for your average Joe to fire up a new node in terms of not only monetary cost, but in the term of time, which we have learned is money.
Yeah.
So anything we can do to stop that from happening is probably worth it. And then the real debate, the real spam debate, I think, is about what is actually practically possible to do. Are the filters functioning? Should op return be bigger or smaller? Like, Core's argument right now is that a larger op return will incentivize these people to use op return instead of using more destructive ways of putting data on the chain. Yeah.
I read there's like some second and third layer stuff that's trying to be built that needs more of that space. I mean, again,
yeah. I don't like that either.
We're going into like super technical.
Yeah. Super technical aspect. And I think
won't we need more layers as Bitcoin scales? Like, you need Lightning, and then there's going to be.
Yeah. I think these layers should also only be monetary. I don't like smart contracts on Bitcoin. I don't want that. I don't want anything on Bitcoin that isn't just for medium exchange over time and space. Mm-hmm. It needs to be pure. If it is to function long term, it needs to be as pure as possible. Like, that's objectively good for Bitcoin. The purer it is, the better it is for everyone using it, and the more secure it is. So it is definitely an attack from a certain perspective.
How do you look at like how Lightning rolls up? Isn't that a smart contract of some form that does that Lightning?
Yeah, but that doesn't use very much data. Like, it's just the transaction in and the transaction out. Mm. So that uses very little other that doesn't clog. Same thing with open timestamps. They also don't use very much data. And since it's an open database that anyone can use, of course anyone can put any data they want in it as long as they follow the rules. I just think that the people who run the software that implements the rules, aka the node runners, mm-hmm. should be very careful around what they allow. Like, I can choose not to relay crap that I don't want to relay, and I should. Mm-hmm. And regardless of who wins this war that we are in right now, the fact that is happening is a testament to that Bitcoin is working.
Yeah,
that people question stuff, and that they by their own volition choose to run other software than Core. It's a very good thing.
Yeah, it's interesting. I know there's this whole thing with Knots and Core. Are you running Knots yourself?
Yeah, I'm running Knots.
Okay, I'm running Core still. I haven't. I agree with the intellectual argument. I guess I just haven't. Looking at Moore's Law and looking at the amount of data and how small Bitcoin, I mean, obviously I told you I use other blockchains and, you know, that are so much bigger, less decentralized. Looking at how small each block is and how incremental that is for my pie personally, like, it's again, 5-6 year old tech. And now I could buy buy a drive that's like seven times.
But it's not only that, it's also like these unspendable, it's the UTXO bloat, right? Uh-huh. Like, and block space is going to be a very rare commodity in the future, which
I think solves the problem.
It does. It does.
But
the problem that is happening right now is, it has gone down. There's much less spam now than it was.
It's, and I think that is not profitable to do.
Because you can only fool people for so long.
Yeah, it's just so.
But I view it as like owning a JPEG on the blockchain is like owning a star in the Andromeda galaxy. Sure, it's there. Yeah. You can call it yours, but so can everyone else, and you can't interact with it. Like, you can take a picture of it and copy it. Like,
it depends on, you know, what
it's just that this way of owning the star in the Andromeda galaxy fucks with everyone's telescope and makes the signal in the telescope distorted.
Yeah, again, I've told you, I don't think Bitcoin is the place for that. And I think economically, it just will not make sense over time.
I don't think people are aware of this. I think there's a bit of a misunderstanding between the people who understand money on a deep level. And I would count, at this point, I would count myself to that group. Uh-huh. And the people who understand the code on a deep level. Mm-hmm. And I don't count myself to that group.
Yeah, I'm the same way as you.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I have a conversational understanding of it.
Anyone who understands money on a deep level should not want anything else but monetary transactions on Bitcoin.
Again, I'm in that camp, and that's what I think. Like, and that's my argument against people who say, you know, maximalists and shitcoin, all this stuff, is like, Bitcoin is money, and other things are other things. Like, these other things, they aren't money, right? So, and not everything is money, right? Like, money is super important. It's important, but it's not everything, right?
Yeah, like, and the question I have with to me, the blockchain and proof of work and all of this stuff mm-hmm. is an unfortunate means to a greater end. I wish we didn't need the Bitcoin protocol. I wish we didn't need the blockchain. The only reason we do is we cannot trust a single human being with running the money printer.
Yeah, I mean, that's just, history has shown us that.
Yeah.
100% right.
And that is also, by the way, why you don't need a blockchain for anything else. Because then you could just trust the other guy and just run a database instead.
Yeah.
It's much more convenient and it's much better for everyone.
I hear what you're saying. I personally find value in databases that are a little bit more decentralized than controlled by one person for other things. That doesn't need the same security that money
needs. I think it's decentralization cosmetics, though, that they're not decentralized
At all. Yeah, it's varying degrees of decentralization. That's the way I look at it.
Well, it's on a spectrum from a certain perspective, but from another perspective, it's not. And the only reason we know that Bitcoin is, or that we believe that Bitcoin is actually decentralized enough, is because we won the block size wars.
Mm.
When all the big companies, all the money in Bitcoin tried to change it into something that was vile and disgusting, which is setting a precedent for increasing the block size, it's the same issue as the spam issue in a way, because it would have over time increased the cost of firing up a new node. Mm-hmm. If the blocks were bigger, the blockchain would grow at a faster rate, making it too costly for Umfufu in Africa to run.
Yeah, I mean, that's the ultimate question. What does that mean? What is too costly, right? So that's kind of...
No, but if you set a precedent that you can increase it once via hard fork, then you allow Bitcoin to hard fork again and again and again.
I think I like how they've done it. They've done these soft fork upgrades that people can run with SegWit. I think that's the right
kind of strategy. What they did. And that's because the users wanted SegWit because it allowed for the Lightning Network. That was the biggest thing with SegWit. But the users didn't want the 2x hard fork, and we stopped it.
Yeah.
And that was that's the very moment where my conviction of Bitcoin was ironclad, and I this is it, holy shit, all the promises are true. We are actually in charge. So we won that battle.
I was around at that time, but I didn't really know what was going on. I didn't really fully understand these things on a deeper level.
Yeah, my first viral article was about how to take control of your private keys, because you needed to do that to be able to sell the Bitcoin Cash token as soon as possible. I wanted to know that, and I wrote an article about it, and apparently other people wanted to know about that.
Yeah, too. I had to figure that out at the time. Yeah. How do I access this thing and mess with it or whatever?
No, and it's Bitcoin Cash was a cross between a Christmas present and a train crash, right?
I was like, what are people at the time? I was like, what are people so upset about? I'm getting this free thing. I can do whatever I want with it. That was I'll take it.
Yeah. And since it, I think it was at a Bitcoin Cash token was worth a fourth of a Bitcoin when it was worth as much as it could be or at its peak.
Yeah.
And, I sold at a little less than that, but I sold at a pretty good time. Increased my stack by a bit. It, to me, it was absolutely obvious which token would win that race. It's a complete no-brainer. Because one was going in the centralized direction and one was keeping the decentralization, which is by far the most important thing here. Otherwise, it doesn't fucking work. You have the blockchain trilemma. You can scalability, decentralization, and security. And so decentralization and security are basically the same thing. You can't have one without the other. It was totally obvious to me who would win, and Bitcoin, what a joke it was. So you have this Bitcoin Judas or Bitcoin Jesus.
Bitcoin Jesus.
Roger Ver. That's a tweet I never made, by the way, but the most provocative tweet I ever thought of is just to piss off everyone, is just like Jesus, it turns out Roger Ver was a false prophet. Anyway, I just thought that. I never did it.
Do you?
So just to finish this off, a year later, Craig Wright forks Bitcoin Cash.
Oh my God.
Another train crash. And this is what happens, right?
Oh, man.
Fork of a fork of a fork. copy of a copy of a copy.
It's always fascinated me how similar it was to like religions, like all these different, you know,
branches and stuff. Yeah.
The Reformation.
Funnily enough, I think Pascal's wager actually works on Bitcoin. It doesn't work with gods for me or with God for me, because the wager is if you might as well believe in God, because if you don't, you may end up in hell.
Have you ever read Nick Szabo's blog post about this topic?
It's
called Pascal's. I want to say, see if you can find Nick Szabo's blog.
Anyway, to play this out, to me, the flaw in Pascal's wager is it leaves out all the other 5,000 gods.
So that was Nick's conclusion as well.
Yeah, but if you count Bitcoin as God, it actually works, because if you believe in Bitcoin, you actually increase its chances of being a real thing.
You got a similar. You have to say Pascal, Paul. There's you can't. Yeah, you can't just say religion.
Let's see. You probably have to say Pascal's wager.
Pascal's scam. That's what he calls it.
Oh, great.
So it's kind of what
I need to read that.
That is actually really good read. So he says, beware of what I call Pascal scams, movements or belief systems that ask you to hope for or worry about very improbable outcomes that could have very large positive or negative consequences.
Yeah.
The name comes, of course, from the infinite reward wager proposed by Pascal.
Yeah.
These days, the large but finite versions are far more pernicious. Naive expected value reasoning implies that they are worth the effort. If the odds are 1 in 1,000 that I could win 1 billion and I am risk and time neutral, then I should expend.
Yeah, this is so funny.
Yeah, it's a really interesting take.
And 2012. Yeah, it was written in 2012.
Yes. Yeah, I think it might have actually been written before that. He did some republishing. He kind of like republished his blog post, but I think it might have actually been from far earlier than that, but I can't say for sure.
I met him last year, and that was a moment for me.
Where did you meet?
In Lugano.
Oh, in Lugano, okay. Yeah, I met him in Miami.
Yeah.
He was kind of definitely a cool moment for me as well.
The Obi-Wan Kenobi.
I think the very first Bitcoin Miami conference, and like nobody fucking really like, he's just, there's that thousands of people and he's just walking around and nobody has any idea.
Yeah, nobody cares.
And I was like,
they think Bitcoin is about JD Vance.
Yeah. Yeah. but yeah, it was really cool. I had spent a lot of time talking to him on X, I guess, when he was still active there, posting about different things and talking about money, which was really cool.
But we get into more of this later on, but this is sort of outlining why I think like maximalism is sort of the wrong term. It was originally a derogatory term from Vitalik Buterin, who is obviously a scammer. Well, 70% pre-mine and retract the old chain. Like, to me, it's an obvious.
Yeah, the pre-mine, I'm not a fan of for sure.
No, but anyway, regardless of what you think about that, it is to say that the uniqueness of Bitcoin, the nodes being in charge, and not the miners, not the developers, not some committee somewhere, it makes it much more unique than most people understand.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just another novelty. It's a discovery on par with the wheel or the internet or the ability to make fire.
Yeah,
mistaken for a gimmick by the masses, and so fuck your shitcoin.
I think that's. I think we'll end this episode on ownership, unless there's anything else that you want to tackle there. But
no, I thought that was the ending.
All right, brother.